Hey there. Ever wonder what happens to all those amazing screenplays that never make it to the big screen? Well, wonder no more. Welcome to Table Read Podcast, where we bring those undiscovered gems to life. Picture this, talented actors giving incredible performances with the occasional laugh or blooper thrown in, produced by award-winning pros. From drama to comedy, TV pilots to feature films, there's something for everyone. And guess what? We release new episodes every week, so don't forget to hit that subscribe button. Table Read Podcast, where great stories finally get their chance to shine.
The Toddcast Podcast. Find us on iTunes, Spotify, YouTube, and at toddhancock.ca.
Sorry about that. We're only a half hour late.
All good, man. Yeah, don't worry about that. Not at all, Corey. Give me a break, buddy.
I completely forgot. Like, I don't know. I was sitting here and I was like looking at stuff and I was eating and I was like, oh shit.
When you I feel like I should be doing something here.
Right? One of those. Yeah.
Nice. Well, thank you, man. Thank you. We have Corey Hirsch on the podcast now. Of course, longtime NHL goaltender. Played with the Vancouver Canucks from 95 through, was it 99? You were there for four seasons, right?
Yeah, I was there for, 95 to 99. Yeah.
Yeah, something like that. Born in Medicine Hat, and I actually had uncles that lived there when I was a little kid. But did you live there as a kid? Because I know you played for the Blazers, Kamloops for junior hockey. But where did you grow up then?
I lived there for 2 years, like till I was 2 years old, and then my dad got transferred to Calgary in a job. Oh. So we ended up moving there. So I grew up in Calgary, and then when I was 16, I left. I left and I went to Kamloops.
Mm.
Your hockey. So yeah, okay. I grew up, I played all my minor hockey in Calgary, grew up there, went to school there, everything. But yeah. So I was just born there and I always had family ties there. So
what was it like growing up in Calgary, right? Like in summer, it's hot as sin. It's like freaking cold as hell in the wintertime. Like it's.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a hockey city. It really is. It's a huge hockey city. Calgary is it's a beautiful city. It's big, obviously. Growing up there, I didn't grow up in the best area, so my memories aren't the best of Calgary. You know, when you're walking home from school and you're two kids from school that are supposed to be your buddies jump you. You know, you're only in the sixth grade or fifth grade, right? So it's not really a fight. It's like, but yeah, grew up in a little bit of a rough neighborhood, but you know, for the most part, the hockey was always good. And that was, really, you know, for me, that was my outlet. That was my, that's what I did.
And what is your, like, when you think back to like, you know, little Tyke and stuff, like what is your first hockey memory?
My first hockey memory is probably, you know, they used to give you goalie equipment. They used to give the kids you didn't have to go buy it because everyone would try it. Right. And so my first hockey memory is my dad taking me to practice and they had goalie equipment in the corner. And, I was so, I couldn't, you know, I think I was like 6 or 7 years old. I wasn't going to ask the coach. I didn't have the cojones to do that. Right. I mean, but my dad was like, no, you want to be the goalie. You go tell the coach, you tell the coach you want that stuff. So sure enough, I walked over there and grabbed the goalie equipment and I never looked back. So that's probably, my best memory of, you know, when I was just a little guy. That's probably my first memory of hockey.
Yeah. Yeah. And Corey, do you know if you're still tied for the most wins in WHL history, like 120?
No, a kid broke it a few years back, about 2 years ago. So it stood for a long time, almost 30 years. So that's
a long, long time. Yeah. And like, what stands out from your time, you know, playing in the dub?
Well, we won the Memorial Cup in 92. So that was a big one, you know. What stands out for me is probably the friendships I made, you know, the friendships I've made for life, that are just, you know, we have a bond, we grew up together. I haven't been back there much, but Kamloops was a great place to play. They did a nice job turning us into young men. You know, they made sure we went to school. There was no messing around. Like Kamloops was very, it was a great place to play. It was a great place to play junior hockey. And there's a reason that they have all those records and all those wins and the years that I played and years prior, because they did a great job. The organization was good people.
Mm-hmm. You still hang out with some of the boys?
I still talk to them every once in a while. Daryl Sador, I'll talk to every once in a while. you know, not a lot. It's like those old high school friends that, you know, everyone moves away, but yeah, you know, if you ever got together with them, you only hear from them once a year, but it's like they never left, right? You know, that's kind of what it's like. So, yeah, yeah,
we're those are the good friends, right? Like those are the ones that, you know, truly are your buddies. Yeah.
And that's it's like you're, it's like going to, I mean, it was between the ages of 16 and 20. So it's like college and high school, right? So those are, those are your boys. Those are the guys you hang out with.
Yeah. Yeah. Talk a bit about the 94 Winter Olympics where you played like every game for Team Canada. You almost snuck out the gold, but got the silver in the shootout loss. No, so what is said in the locker room in a big game like that? Like, and who's saying it? Is it the coach? Is it the captain? Like, what's said after a game like that?
Yeah, you know, after a game like that, I mean, I can't really remember. There's a lot of media and there's a lot of, but at that point, you know, like we weren't supposed to medal. So we weren't even, you know, like they had us slated not even to win. Mm. So for us to get to come home with a medal was pretty cool, right? I mean, I know it's not gold, but the fact that you have one, or I have one, and then that, you know, there's only so many people in the world that, you know, it's pretty special thing. So when you look back and you think about it, you know, pretty special moment to be able to have that silver medal and have an Olympic medal at all,
dude, especially considering, like you're saying, like they weren't even expecting you to get anything.
That's
amazing.
Yeah, people trained for 4 years for 30 seconds to get an Olympic medal, right? I mean, it's crazy. And it's just, yeah, it's really cool to have one.
Yeah. Yeah. And how old would you say then, Corey, that you were when you realized like, maybe I can go all the way. Like I can make it to the NHL.
Probably really started recognizing when I was about 13 or 14. You're just so much better than everybody else. And that's not being, you know, bragging or being arrogant. It is what it is.
It is what it is. Like people like, just couldn't score on you.
Yeah, like Connor Bedard. I mean, I wasn't as good as Connor Bedard, but like, yeah. I mean, they just, you dominated every level, right? And so, you have a pretty good idea. You know, I would say, you know, 90% of the NHL, those guys were the best players in their league, on their teams, in their cities, right? I mean, that's, they were just always that talented. And there are some, you know, there's a lot that don't get drafted that are still good players. You know, that bloom a little later, but for the most part, you know, it's typically the kids that are they're the ones that dominate, you know, are going to have the opportunity to, and then a lot of things have to happen along the line, right? I mean, coaches have to like you, you have to get on good teams, you have to have good players around you. Like there's so much that has to happen to be able to play in the NHL. It's ridiculous.
But you knew fairly early, like 13 is pretty, 13, 14, that's pretty early.
Yeah, you wouldn't say it's the NHL. You knew you were going to play.
But you knew you're, yeah.
But you know you're good. Yeah, you know you're good. You know you're better than, you know, most every, you're going to summer camps. You're getting invited to junior camps. You're getting invited, like, so yeah, you have a good idea of you know, like, your level anyways, or the opportunity. And then it's after that, it's probably better that you don't know what's happening to you, right? Like, cause you just get kind of shot out of a cannon into the professional sports world.
Yeah. And of course you get the taste of that too. In 92, you play 4 games with the Rangers and it's back to the AHL. And then, so maybe talk about the drive and determination that's needed to kind of get back to the NHL. And when you're back with the Canucks, it's in 95, like,
yeah, it's you know, it's interesting because the minors is a great league. Like they're really good leagues, but it's not the NHL. The NHL, it's like, it's electric, right? Buildings, yeah. The lights and everything. Whereas the minors, it's just kind of like, it can be a little depressing to get sent down, right? Because everybody wants to be in the NHL. And so you really have to monitor your emotions and really keep things in check that way, because it's a difficult thing. But you know, as far as like, you know, getting drafted by the New York Rangers was, you knew you weren't ever going to play for the Rangers unless you were elite player, because back then there was no salary cap. They would just go buy who they wanted, right?
Sure.
So I got stuck behind Glenn Healy and Mike Richter, and that's what forced the trade to Vancouver. So yeah, it worked out for me. You know, I ended up in Vancouver, had some pretty good games, and, you know, it was pretty cool. And I still live here today.
Oh, you're in Van. Oh, I didn't know that. Yeah. Oh, Okay. Yeah. And of course, like your first couple of seasons with the team, like in 95, 96, like you played equally and basically splitting the season with Kirk McLean, right? Like,
yeah.
Pretty impressive. And I'm looking at the stats. In fact, you even led Kirk for wins in 95.
Yeah. Yeah. Kirk was, he had a bit of a tough year. You know, but here's the interesting thing. Like I was, this is the thing about mental health is that you'd have never known. Like I was, every day was a struggle to get to the rink, you know, like, but you know, on the ice, I played well. It was kind of my sanctuary, you know, it was my place that, I kind of was my safe space. And I played pretty well. That's what the message that I get out to people out there is like, I was not well, and I still made the NHL. So, you know, when you're out there telling people that they're weak because they have mental health issues, you know, I'm going to smack you in the face. Mm-hmm. Right. Mm-hmm. There's no mentally weak. Some of the mentally strongest people I know are the people that suffer the most.
Well, the ones that smile through are the ones that are generally the ones that are, you know, some hiding something, you know?
Yeah. Those are the ones that scare me a little bit, right? The ones you can't tell.
Yeah. Yeah. Of course, like that's, you know, that's another angle. And another reason why I wanted to have you on the podcast is to get that angle of like the being an outspoken advocate for, you know, mental health awareness and ending the stigma and all that. And when you get into your book, you really dig into your own life. And like, what was that like writing that book? And like, basically you're opening your soul for people to read, right?
Yeah. You know what? The book was interesting because I had a writer write it and then I didn't think he really kind of got the essence of it. So then I rewrote it, a lot of the chapters, but he gave me the base of the book, right? Which was great. Yeah. But then I ran in and I rewrote a lot of the chapters. And then I had a buddy of mine, the guy who wrote the Players Tribune article, he went in and he's a professional writer, right? He makes it come alive. So did a fantastic job of that in the book. But as far as like writing it, like I still haven't read the book. I'll never read it. You know, I'll never read the finished product. I have no interest in reading the finished product. I lived it, right? And it's behind me. I'm proud of it writing the book, and I'm proud that it helps other people, but there's no need for me to go back there, right? I mean, I move forward and a lot of that is a lot of my pain and a lot of my darkness, and you know, and I'd rather look at the product today, you know, so I probably don't see myself ever reading it. I have no interest, to be honest.
Yeah, fair enough. And is that something that you'd like maybe write another book? Not necessarily about mental health awareness, but like, would you write another book, or is that like, that's not happening?
Well, because I'll be honest, like, since I wrote the book, like things have even changed even more, right? Like, so it's like, it's a never ending battle, but it's, you know, there might be another book. I mean, I've gone to work with ayahuasca. I've gone to work with plant medicine, psilocybin, all those things that, you know, and they're quite powerful. Plant medicine is something that I'm interested in. I still believe in the traditional route too. I believe there's a place for both. Mm-hmm. You know, but there's other natural options that I think can help too, that are, you know, like a lot of guys, military PTSD are saying, you know, psilocybin's been life-saving for them.
Like microdosing, you know, or like,
no, what? Like even just good, like you do the ceremony, all that. But okay. I, you know, for anybody out there listening, I'm not promoting or recommending anybody do that. You know, like you got to be very careful of where you go. And it's not a cure. It's just another method of help. And it's, you know, there's lots of different routes out there. So, like I say, you know, the biggest thing is for something like that, you know, it's a personal journey. And you got to really know what you're doing and where you're going. You know, it's helped some people. Traditional route has helped a lot of people. So both have a place in my world.
Yeah. You got to think your podcast is helping a lot of people too, Blindsided.
Yeah. Yeah. It's been very powerful. It's, you know, it can be a tough listen sometimes. There's a lot of struggle and a lot of pain with the people that we interviewed, but the stories are incredible, and how the resilience at the end of it, how they come through it, you know, a better person has been that. That's what makes it all worth it.
Yeah, totally right. Yeah, yeah. Corey, I'm going to get to some fan questions here in just a second. My oldest James wanted to ask you a question, and we'll start it off with his, I guess. He wants to know, did you have any superstitions when you played the game?
Did I have any superstitions? Yeah, I usually put everything on my left, my left side. So I did that.
Was that like from as a little kid? You just
had just everything I put on my left side. Yeah, but I didn't have too many rituals or anything like that. I was too busy in my own head trying to figure out what was going on there to have rituals, to be honest. Yeah, sure. There were some guys like Cliff Ronning was very superstitious. You know, couldn't have black tape, you know, black, you know, blades or whatever on his skates. Like, he could not have anything black. It was he was very superstitious, parked in the same spot all the time.
Brad wants to know what still stands out from the day you were drafted to the Rangers?
Oh man. I think it was more relief than anything. You know, because I got passed over the year before. So you don't really know if you're going to get drafted, right? The next year it used to be different. The draft used to be different. When you were 17, you could only get drafted in the first three rounds. So I got passed over, and then the next year, you really don't know, because now you're in a pool of a lot of different players. I ended up getting drafted in the eighth round by the New York Rangers. And it's pretty cool. I remember I was working at a car wash. I was washing at a car dealership, washing cars. And they brought me a cake and everything, but it was more relief than anything when you get drafted.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. Rob goes, what NHL city other than Vancouver did he enjoy visiting, and which city has the best food?
Oh my goodness. Well, there's no question that Chicago has the best food. However, there is no city like New York City. There's no building like Madison Square Garden. Madison Square Garden is the best building in the world. It's magical. And if you ever get to see an event there, I always tell people you got to go, because it is absolute magic. It's such a great building.
A couple of Chris's here for you. Chris Allen wants to know, what's the one thing Corey would recommend to anybody struggling with mental health?
First things first, go see your doctor, you know, and tell them what's going on. They've heard it all. They've seen it all. That's your first step. That's your first place you go. And don't be afraid to tell your doctor what's going on. Your brain's going to make you a prisoner. It's going to make you try to not get help. And because it wants you to stay sick, right? That's what your brain does. So the best thing you can do is go see your family doctor and not listen to the BS your brain is telling you. And you know, from there, he'll give you a referral to psychologist, psychiatrist, whatever you need to do. But ultimately the work's up to you, right? If you want to go and stay on your meds and you want to, you know, do the mental health work and the therapy and all that stuff. Then ultimately, you know, you got to be your own savior, but you know, the help is there. Go see your family doctor. Take that first step, man. Doctors have heard it. They've seen it all. I've got some doctor friends. They have some of the most heinous stories I've ever heard.
Right.
So they've seen it all. You know, they've got, it's pretty good. So.
All right. Chris Emmett, he said he'd like to know, what are your thoughts when the Canucks signed Messier?
Oh, so I know Messier is an enemy number one in Vancouver, but see, I played with him in New York, right? So I played with him in the Rangers. So I saw what he did. I mean, he won a Stanley Cup in New York. It was one of the most incredible things an athlete's ever done in New York history, right? So I was with him there. So when they traded for him, I mean, I like Mark. Like, he's a friend of mine. And, you know, he ended up enemy number one because probably he was getting older. He had a lot of miles on his body, and he wasn't as good as he was, right? But here's the thing that people don't understand. He signed a big contract back in, he signed, I think, $18 million here to come to Vancouver, and everybody expected, you know, 20-year-old Mark Messier.
Right.
But what happened to those guys was, is in the 80s, those guys never made any money. They made $60,000, right, in the 80s, winning all those cups for the Oilers. So, you know, eventually they want to get paid, and Mess earned it. I mean, how many Stanley Cups he had. And that's the other side, too, is always like, it's funny because people are like, oh, that player makes too much money, blah, blah, blah. And they, you know, they'll bitch about him and all this stuff. But if they put that money in that contract in front of you, what are you going to say? You're going to say, no, I'm not worth that.
Right.
You know, where do I sign and how fast do I sign it? Right.
You're worth what they're willing to pay, man.
Never blame the player. Never blame the player for what, you know, what the market bears or whatever, because we would all sign the same deal if it was put in front of us, right?
Absolutely. Yeah, yeah. All right, Corey, I'll steal a few minutes more of your time. We'll get it outside of hockey, if that's cool.
Yeah, we got to get to know you a little bit.
I'm curious, what are you binge watching lately? Like, what are the TV shows, Netflix, Disney? Like, what are the things you can't stop
watching? You know what I binge watch is World Series of Poker.
Yeah.
On YouTube. I've been watching like 2008, 2009, 2010. That's my extent of binge watching. I don't watch a lot of TV. But yeah, if I do right now, it was NFL football. You know, I'll throw on the Canucks game, or I'll binge watch Poker Stars. Sorry, I wish I had a better answer for you.
No, not at all. Are you a big fan of all the superhero movies that are being made? Like, were you a comic book kid growing up?
No, I've never been a comic book guy. Never been any of that. Never was really into that. I was all about sports. Like, I was all about sports. Like, I still today, you know, like, it's fascinating. I'll get into a conversation where there's three people talking about insurance, and I don't have anything to say. I don't have anything to add.
Yeah.
As soon as the word hockey comes up, or baseball, or football, or golf, like, I'm all over it. Like,
you're like, I got something for that.
It's what I know, right? It's what I know.
That's fair.
Yeah.
Which superpower would you want to have if you could have?
Easily invisibility.
Yeah. I'll fly on the wall.
You're not invisible anywhere. How awesome would that be?
That would be pretty amazing.
But then I probably wouldn't want to hear what the coaches were saying about me in the coach's office after I played with invisibility. So
Yeah,
they're pretty, I mean, that'd be pretty cool. I mean, you know, spider webs would be pretty cool too. Right. I mean,
bullet speed would be great, and teleportation would be awesome. And
X-ray vision would be illegal.
Sure. Totally right. Corey, what was the music like in the Hirsch house as a kid growing up? What are your parents playing?
Oh my God. Elvis Presley. Mm. My family. Big Elvis fans. My mom, big Elvis fan. And then probably a lot of like 60s. I don't know if like you can call it rock back then, but my dad had like some sort of 60s kind of, you know, all that stuff we used to have to listen to the car on repeat. Mm. And I'd be begging for him to change the channel. But yeah, that's what I remember most. Probably Elvis. I mean, the man is still a legend.
Oh, of course. Yeah. And what was the first concert that you went to?
Oh, I love this question. My mom took me to Tina Turner, Beyond Thunderdome.
Okay.
So I saw Tina, and then two nights later I went and saw Kiss with my brother, no makeup. They had taken their makeup off. So I said, I saw Kiss, and then I saw Kiss on their last world tour in 1996. And then I saw them on the End of the Road tour in 2006. And then I saw them again in 2004. They just kept saying they were retiring. They just don't.
Yeah.
They're like, no. Yeah.
Well, didn't they like wrap shit up now, and like there's like avatars or something? Like, it's like, what's going on, guys? Come on.
They're coming back. You know they are.
They're coming
back. Best concert I ever went to was Prince, though. It was GM Place back then. I didn't want to go. And my buddy had tickets. He used to do all the negotiating for the concerts for it was GM Place at the time. And I was like, Prince, he was a symbol. Remember, he changed his name to this. And I was like,
right, the artist formerly known as.
That's just the stupid, I don't want to go see this guy. And I went anyways, and my chin was on the floor the whole time, and how talented he was. It was ridiculous.
Crushing show.
Oh, it was ridiculous. It was played every instrument better than anybody you've ever heard. You know, the drum, piano, guitar. Whatever it was,
he's that annoying musician. You know, if you also play, you're just like, fuck, this guy plays everything and like better than everybody.
Yeah, and you can never be that good, right? Like, you can never be that level.
All right, Corey, a couple more, and then I'll let you go here. This isn't necessarily a question, more of like a near-death story where you were like, holy shit, I could have just died there.
Oh yeah, easily. I was in Romania, and I was getting a ride to the airport. And if you've ever been in Europe, they don't have lanes. Like, they just don't follow the rules. So we were on a mountain road, and we were going around a corner, and we were on the inside of the mountain. On the other side was cliff, and it was only two lanes. Some guy tried to pass the bus that was coming our way. And I don't know how it was on the corner. Like, it was a blind. I don't know how, but there must've been a millimeter of space between us and the mountain. When the driver pulled over, the bus almost went over the side of the cliff and nothing happened. And I just sat there and went, holy shit, I should be dead right now.
Wow. Like, it was like, and how old were you for this?
I was 20. No, I was doing a goodwill thing for Hockey Canada. I was in my 30s.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Crazy.
You're like, wow.
You know, because I'm sure there's been other times where I didn't even know.
For sure. Yeah. Yeah. Most guys have near death stories.
Yeah. Well,
most girls do too. Most people do. Yeah.
Yeah.
I'd All right. That. Last one. This one could be the hardest. It could be the easiest. Can you pick and nail it down to just one career highlight, or is it too hard?
One career highlight. Yeah, I mean, I can probably, one career highlight. It's gotta be the Forsberg goal. It's gotta be. Yeah. Cause it, you know, even though it was a goal against me, it's still relevant in history today. They call it the Forsberg, right? It gave me a household name. It gave me the ability to do what I do today, right? Which is talk about mental health. So I would have to say that's probably, you know, the greatest moment in sports history for me. Mm-hmm. Even though it was a goal against me, I'd have to say that that's probably it. That, what else?
Where would you put Forsberg, by the way, and, like, you know, the guys you played against? He's top 10, easy, hey?
He's, yeah, like, with the guys I played against, well, I mean, I played against a lot, Mario, Gretzky, all those guys, but he was definitely a worthy of a Hall of Fame. He was a lot tougher than people think.
I just remember, like, at that time in, like, the mid-90s when you were with the Canucks, and, like, the Avalanche would just fucking tear through us. Like, it was... Hot night through butter. Like, they were just decimating us.
Yeah.
Deadmarsh and Sakic and, like, Adam Foote and all those guys. Like, they just were killers, man.
They had a guy named Hejduk.
Milan Hejduk.
Yeah. That was a really good player. They had Claude Lemieux. They had Sakic. They had Deadmarsh. They had, you know, on the back end, they had Ozilinch. And then they had Patrick Waugh and net. Right. And we all remember, when the day Patrick got traded, we were all like, it was the only thing that Colorado was missing was a goalie. That was it. And once Patrick got traded there, the rest of the league was fighting for second place.
Pretty much, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Corey, thank you, Matt, for doing this with us tonight. You are easy to find online. Corey Hirsch 72 on Instagram. You're Corey Hirsch on Twitter.
Yep.
Is there a website you want people to go check out?
CoreyHirsch.com.
CoreyHirsch.com. Corey
Hirsch all the time. Yeah. I got my book out, Saved My Life. You know, they do public speaking, so a lot of that's going on. And I appreciate it. It's been great. I appreciate the interview. Thank you.
Follow along on Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, YouTube, and SoundCloud. Find us at Toddcast Podcast.
Are you thinking about getting into Dungeons and Dragons? Maybe you're looking to expand your horizons as a DM or a player. If that's the case, then it's time for you to check out The Dungeon Cast, the best D&D podcast out there that helps you passively learn all about the game just by listening. Join co-hosts Will and Brian as they break down the lore of a rich multiverse 50 years in the making in a lighthearted and beginner-friendly way. They cover everything from character creation options to tips for dungeon masters. There's something for everyone, no matter how long you've been playing TTRPGs. Get inspired while learning all about the unique planes of existence. Get the in-depth knowledge you need to help your combat encounters feel impactful, or learn about the origins and pantheons of every race and class the game offers. No stone is left unturned as every edition of the game is explored and explained in a way that benefits players of all different levels of experience. You can expand your TTRPG horizons in a way that's as entertaining as it is educational just by listening. All you have to do is go to your favorite podcast app or YouTube and search for The Dungeon Cast.